This is the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, Richard James Rogers, high school science and chemistry teacher and author of the award-winning book, The Quick Guide to Classroom Management. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode on the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, as always, Richard James Rogers. And today I would like to discuss how we can get through to those students who are very compliant and very quiet. And in my experience, these students often get overlooked because they tend to just do what they're told, go with the motions, they submit their work on time, and they can tend to go under the radar because they're so compliant and so quiet. So how do we reach these students, particularly if a quiet student is underperforming, and you want to get that student participating more, or you want to encourage that student to talk more and become better at public speaking, or better at collaboration, or better at expressing themselves? Because let's admit it, being able to articulate what you know is a great way for you to remember that information and is a great learning tactic in and of itself, processing information and presenting it and talking about it and discussing it. That whole process builds long-term memory. Now, with these students, there's a few techniques you can use. If we're talking about whole class question time or whole class activities, and you're noticing that one or two students are consistently quiet, never put their hand up or never offer an answer, I do believe in cold calling from time to time. Now, you have to use the students' names, obviously. You have to know the students' names to do this properly, which is why it's important to really get to know your students quickly. But you can say, for example, Jessica, what do you think? Richard, what do you think? Jonathan, what do you think of this? Now, you might find that when you ask students a question outright like that, they might get nervous. They might still not say anything. So what you might want to consider is asking a student who you know is going to say something, and then you can ask another student, one maybe one of the quiet ones, to add to that. So you could say, for example, Jessica, what do you think about this? Jessica gives you some kind of answer that she's articulated, and then you choose one of the quiet students and you say, let's say Jonathan, for example, Jonathan, would you like to add anything to that? Or what do you think of what Jessica said? Or is there anything else, Jonathan, that we can that we can add to that answer? So I do think that prompting and cold calling is a very good technique. It's a legacy technique. Whenever teachers are observed by senior leaders and by lesson observers, one of the top comments that comes up is that questioning wasn't used strategically enough. And a massive, massive issue that I think every teacher has faced at some point in their career is you'll get some students who are really keen. I'm dealing with a few right now, actually, who will always shout out the answer when you ask the class a question. And that kind of alleviates everybody else from doing any work. And I think it is important that when you have really keen students who do want to answer questions, you allow them to do that. But there comes a point when you say, okay, I'm going to ask someone else to answer now because Jerry has already answered so many questions. Or, you know, you can make it so that you tell the students, hands up, please, no shouting out. Or even don't even allow students to put their hands up, just ask them by name. Now, this is a good way to also manage behavior to some extent, because if you're working with a group of students who tend to show some levels of low-level disruption from time to time, so there might be some chatter or a little bit of distraction in the classroom, then you can use questioning as a tactic to bring those students back on task. So Jerry, what do you think? Jonathan, can you add to that? Now, when you start doing this, when you start asking students questions about content, particularly if they're distracted, you will find that other students will start to listen and focus because they could be asked a question. So it can be a very good behavior management technique as well. But for those students who are quiet, beyond cold calling and beyond calling out their name and asking them a question upright, which can be quite nerve-wracking for many students, I do believe it is crucial to explore opportunities to have one-to-one conversations with those quiet students. Now, how can we do this? Especially if we're in a classroom teaching scenario and you have many students to teach. Well, those who followed me for a long time will know that I am a big advocate for live marking. Live marking, just a quick reminder, is when you mark students' work with them in real time. So you either do that by walking around the classroom and marking the work as you walk around with a red or green pen or whatever color you use, or you call the students to your desk one at a time as the class is doing a task, and you mark that work with the student and have a conversation with the student whilst you're marking that work with them. And those conversations, those feedback conversations, can be a really great way to get those nervous students, those quiet students, to open up. Because generally speaking, the quiet students are much more likely to speak in a one-to-one situation with the teacher than if they're asked to say something in front of the class. So consider adopting live marking wherever you can. It's a great assessment technique anyway. Oftentimes what I will do is I will also bring in verbal feedback with that, which is ever so slightly different. So let's say I'm having a one-to-one conversation with a student and I'm going through the good points of the student's work. I might say to that student, what do you think could be improved about this work? Maybe they'll come up with one or two ideas. Then you can use prompting. If they don't come up with anything, you can use prompting. What do you think of this diagram? Is it too small or is it too big? What do you think of this handwriting? Could it be neater or is it okay? What should we do with our titles? Should we leave them like that or should we underline them? So by providing a menu of options to choose from, oftentimes you will get these quiet students to at least choose the correct option and tell you what should be corrected with their work, for example. You may also use that time during live marking or verbal feedback So just ask the student how they're doing, how class is going. Maybe ask them some subject-specific questions as well. Other things that you can do to reach those quiet students are to schedule meetings outside of class as well, during lunch times, break times, after school, if you feel that you would like to dedicate time to that. And also, a lot of the quiet students, this is interesting, a lot of the quiet students, they tend to open up really well through emails and through any messaging system, any professional messaging system that your school uses. So if you're really struggling to get answers from a student, if it feels like drawing blood from a stone, you might want to think about doing some kind of group chat or email-based, online-based chat kind of system with your students. Maybe a task where you send every student a question through Google Chat, for example, Google Hangouts, and they have to respond to you. That's a good way to get quiet students to open up, albeit electronically, of course. You can also do that only with the quiet students as well. Now, beyond that, one thing I think we have to address is the root causes for students being so quiet in the first place. There can be many reasons for this, but the most common ones include the student not being proficient in English or the language of instruction. Another one can be feeling nervous around their friends and not feeling comfortable in that classroom scenario. And just feeling like they don't want to take a risk in front of everybody. That feeling of embarrassment can cause students to be quiet. And of course, the probably the most common one is just lack of confidence. Lack of confidence in themselves, lack of confidence in their abilities, and lack of confidence in the subject matter. And that can often stem from negative experiences in their past education, or even pressure from home as well. A lot of students have pressure from home to perform, and a lot of students are afraid of saying an incorrect answer or making a mistake, and then not feeling good about that, or their family being informed about it. You know, that kind of performance anxiety really does exist in many of our students. So I think getting the school counselor involved, if you have that service, I think is a great idea. And I think oftentimes in schools where there are counseling services offered, it's unfortunate that they're not utilised widely and deeply and broadly enough. And it's so unfortunate that we don't refer students to school counsellors often enough, because school counsellors have expert training in how to get to the root causes of these problems. And if you do have students who are really quiet and who are not opening up, do consider referring them to some kind of counselling service. If your school has an in-house school counsellor, get them involved, ask for their advice. If you don't have that system in place, maybe explore outside sources or explore ways in which your school can possibly offer that service. But finding out the root cause is very, very crucial. Typically, if the root cause of the quietness is lack of confidence, that's one of the easiest problems to solve for a teacher, because we can always build up our students' confidence through sincere, regular praise. But it has to be sincere. It can't be flattery. Flattery doesn't work. You know, our students, especially in the secondary school, they can recognize when everyone is being praised and they're not receiving anything special in terms of positive feedback. So our praise must be sincere. And don't forget my favorite phrase, which I coined many years ago: praise must be collective in order to be effective. So if you do have a student who is quiet, who's not opening up, but they produce, let's say, some really good homework, or they do an online task with incredibly high accuracy, for example, get that student to one side, tell them how pleased you are with them, then inform their homeroom teacher, inform their form tutor, inform other teachers in the school, and literally ask them to reinforce your praise. Could you please tell Jonathan he did some great work, and if you could just please praise him like I have, I really want to build up his confidence. And you will find, everybody, that many students will start opening up, offering more verbal responses in class, and becoming more confident when they can see that their efforts are yielding positive results and they are receiving praise. Now, I'm not going to pretend that's going to work with every student. It won't. There are some students who you will try many, many techniques for a long period of time and it still might not work. And those techniques still might not encourage the student to open up. And it's in those instances, of course, that we must have patience. Some students, they take years and years to blossom and to really come into themselves, especially during those teenage years. Because let's not forget that our teenagers and our preteens, that, you know, they're going through hormonal changes, they're going through adolescence. They're going through a lot of different challenges in their lives. And, you know, it does take some students quite a while to really come into themselves and be confident enough to actually provide a verbal response in class or to speak up more. So consider that. If the root cause of the problem is English proficiency or language proficiency, then again, you know, look into the myriad of techniques that exist out there to address that. Some that I can think of now are, again, those one-to-one conversations, live marking, and also scaffolding, breaking down large texts into small pieces for those students, differentiating our resources. What does that mean? It means making sure that every student, even if they are an EAL, ESL learner, has the same learning objectives, but we make the resources more accessible to them. Maybe by providing choice as well, allowing every student to choose the way that they approach a task. Maybe, you know, you can offer those EAL learners the opportunity to make an infographic, to make some slides, to complete an online quiz, to record an audio version if they want to use their translator. There's all kinds of creative ways that you can reach those English as an additional language learners. Now, if the root cause of the quietness is past trauma or pressure from home or nervousness within the classroom, I will admit that that is going to be more difficult and more challenging to solve. And that is going to take time. And in those instances, I think it is very important to refer to third-party help, to school counselors, to trained professionals. It's going to involve some work. It's going to involve therapy in some cases. It's going to involve lots of conversations. And it's going to involve gradually building up that student's skill base, knowledge base, confidence in themselves, and also coping strategies as well. There's a lot of students who experience panic when they're asked a question. There's a lot of students who not only get nervous, but they kind of freeze up when things get challenging. So it's a case of really slowly breaking down that problem for those students, and I guess providing bite-sized steps for them to achieve along the way. If the issue, for example, is answering in class, answering questions in class or speaking up in class, the first stage might be simply for the student to answer yes or no to a question. You might say, Amanda, is this hydrogen? Yes or no? Is the answer four? Yes or no? You know, that could be the start. If that's difficult, if just getting them to say yes or no is tricky, you might want to just start by doing some spatial activities, getting the students to put their hands up for true or hands up for false, or getting the students to move to one side of the room if the answer's true and move to the opposite side of the room if the answer's false. And then it's building up from there. After a student has managed to say yes or no to a question, then it's providing options. Is the answer four or two? Is the color red or green? And the student chooses one of those answers, and it's gradually building up the student's milestones, I guess, the things that they have to achieve along the way. And I must admit, for the everyday teacher, that does require a lot of good organizational skills. We not only have to plan our lessons very well, but we have to plan the activities and the methodologies we're going to use with those learners who are very quiet and who rarely speak up. And once we've planned those methodologies, we also have to kind of track how that's going as well. And you may wish to use Google Sheets or some kind of spreadsheet system to keep a track of that. How did that student perform in this lesson? Did they answer a yes or no question? Maybe you want to try that again the following lesson. And when they've answered three yes or no questions in a row, maybe next time you try an options question. Maybe after that you try a short answer question. Maybe after that has been embedded, you try a longer answer question and get the student to articulate a full sentence. So it does require monitoring, it does require planning, it does require vigilance, and I have to say it may take a while. It may even take longer than one academic year to get a student to a stage where they are confident enough to give a full sentence answer to a question in class. It may take longer, and that's why I do believe that long-term planning is important with many students, and it requires collaboration as well. So do make sure that if another teacher is taking over that class when you leave that class, or you leave that school, or there's a new academic year, that you provide very good handover notes to the new teacher so that they can carry on building those skills with that student or with that group of students you've been working with. So everyone, I do hope that was a good overview of some strategies. I am currently writing a blog post about this as well, which will be linked in the show notes of this podcast episode. By the way, I have a great blog for teachers I recommend for you all. It's at richardjamesrogers.com, Once again, that's richardjamesrogers.com. Why is it so good? It's not because it's my blog. That's not the only reason, but it contains hundreds and hundreds of articles on there covering everything you could think of to do with practical teaching tips, from assessment to feedback to classroom management, behavior management, working with parents, working with colleagues, cognitive load theory. There's all kinds of brilliant blog posts on there. Many are written by me, and many are written by trusted third parties as well. Also, why not check out my award-winning, best-selling book for teachers called The Quick Guide to Classroom Management, 45 Secrets That All High School Teachers Need to Know. And that book is available on Amazon, at Blackwell's, Barnes & Noble, even at Walmart. So it's available everywhere. And the link to the Amazon sales page for that book is in the episode description. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Until next time, bye-bye for now.